I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome back to Radio Times. With ice and snow on the ground and freezing temperatures, it's a good time to start thinking about making an escape to warmer climates or beginning plans for a big trip in 2015. The low cost of fuel prices and the tumbling value of the euro has made Europe an attractive and relatively affordable place to visit. The thaw between the U.S. and Cuba has put a trip to that island country on many people's itinerary. It's a big world out there to explore and lots of options for the adventurous and curious traveler. Today on Radio Times, recommendations and tips for your next trip. We have a trio of guests, and let me introduce you to them one by one. Don George is a veteran travel writer and editor. He's also editor-at-large for National Geographic Traveler, author of Lonely Planet's Guide to Travel Writing, and kind of a regular at this time of year on Radio Times. Don George, nice to have you back on the show.
Great to be back, Marty. Thank you.
You're welcome. And also with us is Michael Luongo. He's a New York-based travel writer. Among his 15 travel books are Frommer's Buenos Aires and Gay Travels in the Muslim World. And Michael Luongo, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here as well. Thank you.
And joining us from the NPR studio in New York is Allison Busaka. She's travel editor for BBCTravel.com. She's also worked at the New York Times travel section. In fact, started her travel career at National Geographic Traveler. And Allison Busaka, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And let me begin with you, Allison. Where are you going to go this year? What's your next trip?
My next trip is actually 2 weeks away. I'm camper vanning through New Zealand for 3 weeks. So we're starting from Auckland and heading all the way down to Queenstown.
And who's the we?
We is me and my boyfriend, who honestly, he's earned his chops on the road. He's proven himself to be an excellent travel partner.
And why New Zealand?
You know, New Zealand has kind of always been on our radar. It's a place that has a lot of what we look to kind of explore. It's got amazing wine. It has great hiking, epic landscapes. Dan, in particular, is a fantastic photographer. So I think it's a place where he can really exercise some of his skills. And, you know, if sleeping in a camper van together for 3 weeks kind of doesn't prove that we're worth being together, I don't know what would.
Well, call us in 3 weeks and let us know how things go.
I will.
sounds like fun. Michael, what's your next trip?
Well, I'm not going to travel for a couple months. I'm staying put for a little while to write about some things here in New York. But my next trip's in May. I'll be going to Mexico, to Puerto Vallarta for the NACHA, North American Travel Journalists Association's conference. And then I plan to spend the whole month of July in Argentina. Argentina's a place that I've lived in off and on for Frommer's. I'm the About.com Argentina person. And July is relatively low season. It's winter there. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on in July. Their preparations for their 9 de Julio, the 9th of July, Bicentennial, which will actually be next year, but preparations for it this year. It's my birthday month, so
all good
I like
things
to kind of spend it there. And it's very inexpensive now with all the chaos with the peso. You get bargains like you would have experienced back in 2002, 2003. Those are coming back.
Interesting. And to you, Don George, where are you going this year?
I'm going to Japan and Thailand and Bali, for sure. And then we'll see what else happens.
And your wife is Japanese, isn't she?
She is, yes. So I'm going back to Kyoto and then Shikoku, which is the island where my wife is from. And that's the smallest of the four main Japanese islands, and it's a place that I really, really love. So I'm looking forward to that.
It seems there's a lot of interest in Southeast Asia. Is that something new, Don?
I wouldn't say it's new, but I'd say it's evolving, and as people get more sophisticated and maybe do Europe first, and then they feel like, okay, I can go one step further. Southeast Asia is a really natural next step, and it's so welcoming, and it's relatively cheap, and places like Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam are really, really popular, and Japan actually has become more affordable, so it's really increasing in popularity these days too. And of course it's such an easy place to travel and so safe that it's a really welcoming destination for people.
And speaking about affordable, and perhaps I'll toss this back to you, Allison, have fuel prices affected things like airfare yet?
You know, we're still seeing a lot of news come out where fuel prices are dropping. It's not quite affecting airfare yet. And I think that that's something that the airline industry can and probably will start to address. There are certain new routes, though, that are opening that I think that's really where the deals are. And as you get announcements for that, as you see those routes developing, that's, I think, the real opportunity for a distinct airfare deal.
And what are some of these new routes?
I remember that JetBlue just opened up a route to Colombo early last year, and that they were offering $600 round trip tickets. I mean, that's enough to say, you know, let's go, or
And let's go today. Yes,
exactly. And I, you know, there's another there's a few routes I think opening up to Singapore, to Sri Lanka. So if you kind of look for those emerging destinations, you'll start to see places that probably you didn't think to really approach before, or places you maybe didn't know about. But with that great of a deal, give it a shot.
Indeed. Let me ask you all about Cuba. And perhaps, Michael, I'll start with you. My reading of some of your work is that you were in Cuba maybe about 11 or 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And with this thaw, it's kind of the beginning of the thaw. Is it time to, and can you jump on an airplane and fly to Cuba, or are there still lots of rules and regulations?
Well, there still are lots of rules and regulations, but your best bet is to look at some of the operators heading to Cuba now with Cuban families. But my suggestion to people is to get there sooner rather than later, because changes will begin to happen. And even having gone in 2003 and I went legally as a journalist via Miami, I think CubaMar was the company that I had booked through. You saw how developed tourism already was in 2003. Not to the standards most Americans are used to, but large numbers of tourists from Canada coming illegally from the States as well, and from Europe. So you want to get there sooner rather than later, before there are too many changes, because those changes have already been in process for many years, and Americans have just missed out on them.
Don, you want to add to that?
I would love to get to Cuba myself, and I think that this is the time to do it. I agree that the Americanization of Cuba is going to start and move very, very quickly once more and more Americans start going there legally. And so I think this is a great time to do it. And there are a number of companies who are already in place taking people there. And I would think that's the way to go right now, is find one of those and grab one of their upcoming trips.
And I guess it has to be what is described, I guess loosely described, as kind of people-to-people programs. It's not like you can just sort of go there, right, Don?
You cannot willy-nilly just wander into Cuba yet, no. And you still have to be with a company that is licensed with a people-to-people program. It's opening up so that more and more companies can do this, but you're still restricted as to what exactly you're able to do. And so the companies that have been doing it for a while have really established contacts and itineraries and can get you behind the scenes, and that's why I would go with one of them.
Allison, do you want to go, or have you been to Cuba?
I haven't been yet. It's kind of, again, just like Don, something that I'm very eager to do. And I think I have a slightly different perspective, just specifically because our readership is so global. The opening for Americans is impactful, but not quite, I think, as great a shift for our specific audience. However, I will echo, things will definitely change. And we've seen this with every destination that all of a sudden gets an influx of travelers. You know, look at Myanmar and everything that's been happening there. It's important to go now. I think it's also important as travelers to just be very aware of kind of what we're doing to destinations when we go there, right? Be respectful, take it for the culture and everything that you'll learn from being there, more so than kind of looking for things that will inevitably change.
Is it American tourists who change a place like Cuba, or is it just the influx of tourism itself, Allison?
I think it's the influx of tourism. You know, every single demographic has different things that they look for when they travel, but the sheer number just immediately disrupts kind of the local flow of how things are done and what infrastructure there is. And some of those changes are great, right? You know, look at Sri Lanka. They recently opened a highway just to kind of make it a lot easier for not only locals, but also travelers to get around. And, you know, it was so exciting that everyone got on the highway to drive for the very first day, right? So I think tourism can have really beneficial effects. And then I also think just as travelers, as global citizens, we have the opportunity to just be hyper aware when we go to new destinations that are emerging, to be kind of just sensitive to the fact that we are disrupting that local flow.
Do you want to weigh in on that, Don, from your longtime experience as a traveler?
I agree completely with everything Allison just said. I mean, I think that there is a huge boon to tourism, which is that it can help revive, like, the rhino in Africa. It can do great things, and it can help people become aware of their culture and actually want to sustain it and preserve it. But on the other hand, we as travelers can have a profoundly negative impact on a place, too, and we just have to be incredibly mindful wherever we go of what our effect is. And we also have to be mindful that travel is a two-way street. We're communicators and teachers when we travel, as well as learners. And so we give back to the places we go, as well as take away from them. And for me, that's what travel fundamentally is all about. And we just have to be mindful of that wherever we go.
Michael, let me turn to you. And I've noticed in guidebooks, websites, and also in some of the cities that I have visited, probably all of the cities that I visit, is that they are gay-friendly, if I can say that, very welcoming. Is this something new and different?
You know, actually, as Don was talking about the two-way street, you know, this is one of the things that kind of came to my mind. I think we're seeing both in the United States and internationally that most of the world is becoming much more gay-friendly. Same-sex marriage, gay marriage, that's constantly in the news. There's clearly the civil rights aspect to it, but then there's also the commercial aspect to it that people are realizing. And so that's impacting what hotels offer throughout the United States. Every time a country welcomes same-sex marriage, you see a boom in LGBT in gay travel. This happened to Argentina. This happened to Spain. This happened to Portugal. This happened to most of Western Europe. And then you see this sort of, where it kind of follows on, where countries see this, and you see how the economics of the civil rights issues also impact the civil rights issues. Do you know what I mean?
So I do.
It's sort of a push and pull. In some ways, you'd wish that it wasn't only for commercial reasons that civil rights were pushed, but this is one of the ways in which you do see that gay tourism and the promotion of gay tourism can aid civil rights issues in various countries and states.
We're almost up in a break here, Don. Do you want to add to that? I heard a little noise coming from you.
I just loved what he said, that you wished it wouldn't have to be because of commercial reasons. And I think the good thing is that commercial reasons do propel civil rights issues. And once people are aware of the civil rights issues, they say, oh, yeah, why didn't we just do this all along?
Yeah.
Well, we are talking about places to visit, places to travel to in the year 2015 or perhaps even beyond. And we have three travel experts. So the voice you just heard is Don George. He's a veteran travel writer and editor, someone that we have called up from time to time, or probably on a pretty regular basis when it's really cold here in Philadelphia, and ask him to tell us where we should book our next trip. He's editor-at-large for National Geographic Traveler. Michael Luongo also with us, and he's a New York-based travel writer, and among his books are Frommer's Buenos Aires and Gay Travels in the Muslim World, and Allison Busaka, a travel is travel editor for bbctravel.com. So if you have any questions, this is the place to call. Phone number 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and a tweet, WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We are getting recommendations and tips for planning your next adventure, your next trip, your next vacation with three travel writers, Don George, Michael Luongo, and Allison Busaka. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and I will read those on the air. Allison, let me go back to you, but I'd like to hear from you, Don, and you, Michael, as well. You know, this is a time of year you get the 50 places you should go this year. What determines what's the next hot, new, interesting, undiscovered place? Is it just someone's opinion about something, or are there actual trends and things that align so that some place becomes the place to go?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, travel is inherently kind of the science of recommendations, right? We see that travelers really look to their friends. They look to travel publications to say, what did you enjoy about a place and why should I enjoy it as well, or why may I enjoy it as well? There's obviously also trends that play into it. You know, as we've talked about, there's new routes opening up. There are kind of places that are more accessible than they've ever been before. There's infrastructure that's building up. All of those places, or all of those things, rather, make a destination easier to get to, more accessible, a reason to visit now. You know, a lot of what I look for as a travel editor, specifically when I'm writing or publishing stories, is why are we talking about this destination now? Right. You know, I do have the luxury of saying we can write about Paris at any point, but what is new about it? You know, what is kind of unexpected? Even if you've been to Paris before, why is it worth revisiting? And that's what these lists really kind of have the opportunity to do on a global scale, is say, what are those places that are different now and will offer an exceptional experience this year more so than any other?
And Michael, I know, I mean, some of these lists, they have different cities or countries on or even states on the top of the list. But I know it's places like Bulgaria showing up. Is there a reason for that?
You know, I think a lot of it also has to do with adjacencies, and also as, you know, one place becomes very popular and sort of maybe played out a bit, but people who go there find out about other locations. And I think Oman, for an example, everybody's been going to Dubai.
Right.
And then they hear about people who live in Dubai, and then they vacation in Oman. And so people then find out about these other nearby destinations. So you had a lot of Eastern Europe that became very popular. And so then people were hearing about other places like Bulgaria, which was very cheap. And also, one of the things that fueled a lot of that in Europe were these, like, EasyJet and these other very cheap airlines, which allowed Europeans to vacation in some of these places very cheaply. And then Americans began to hear about them. So part of it's the adjacencies and visiting and getting advice from other people where you're vacationing and asking where they're vacationing. You also have a lot of things with anniversaries. Europe is going to be very important this year because of the end of World War II anniversaries. We've just celebrated or commemorated the Holocaust Memorial Day, which was the liberation of Auschwitz, the 70th anniversary. And you're going to have a lot of these anniversaries through the beginning of this year. And that's another reason to visit. Mm. It's sort of a sad reason or to commemorate, but you're also going to be able to speak with people about those experiences, and that's going to make this year in particular very interesting for visiting parts of Europe. So it's not a happy reason, but an important historical reason.
In fact, I was at Auschwitz last fall. To you, Don, how do you see how these trends align?
Well, I've been doing where to go next year lists for about 30 years now,
exactly.
So it's been really interesting to see
how
they evolve.
You have sent me to a number of places, I have to add.
I'm glad.
Happily
I hope you
so.
Liked them.
I did.
I think partly it's world events, like with Cuba, for example, for Americans. Suddenly it's easier to go there, or it soon will be. I think it's internal events with Myanmar. I mean, certainly 5 years ago, very few people were going there, and then suddenly there was a certain amount of change internally, and more people began to go. And then I do think the whole contiguousness, either geographical or just sort of more cultural, there's that equation of, you know, the X is the new Bali or Y is the new Costa Rica. I actually think Bali is the new Bali.
I'll
because
do you.
You can go to Bali and find what people are talking about when they say, oh, you should have been here 30 years ago. You can still find that. You just have to go to different parts of Bali to find it. And so I think it's a very rich mix of all of these trends, and sometimes it's purely economic. A country, suddenly the dollar becomes much more powerful than it used to be, and everyone's going there. So it's a wonderful mix, and I loved that phrase that Allison used, the science of recommendations. A lot of it's just that, too, the word-of-mouth factor.
I just saw Steve Coogan's movie about Italy, and I have to say, by the time the movie was over, Allison, I was ready to book a trip to Italy. It looks so wonderful. There's also that, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, sometimes it is. It's an image. It's, you know, even a song, right? You want to kind of go and experience that music. You want to see those things that you've seen in magazines or movies. It's whatever flips that switch of inspiration. It can be any number of things.
Let me see what Jane from Westchester has to say. And Jane, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
We're planning a trip to Europe in fall, and going to probably the Dordogne, and then maybe also friends in Switzerland and Austria. And wondering about the pros and cons of traveling around by train or whether to fly. We may start in the UK, and I'm just not sure whether train would be fun in terms of just seeing the scenery, but then I think it could be that flying might even be cheaper than train. So I was just wondering what your panelists thought.
In fact, Jane, let me start with Alison Busaka, since she's travel editor for bbctravel.com. What do you think, Alison?
And the options are train versus driving or train versus flying?
Train versus flying.
Train versus flying.
Yes.
I think for most of Central Europe, there's no beating the train. You know, the train, it does. It allows you to see the scenery. The train stations are centrally located in each of the cities, which really does reduce your time to get out to the airports. When you really look at it that way, it's also generally taking about as long as it would to get to the airport, to check in, to go through security, to fly. And, you know, in terms of your luggage, which kind of is also a personal preference, depending on what you're bringing, it's going to be a lot easier to get your luggage on and off a train. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to bring certain things, not have to take things out in Ziploc bags, et cetera, that, you know, you do have to kind of deal with when you go through security at an airport. So I think you just get kind of a more immersive experience. You get a slightly easier transport experience. And it really makes – Europe has made the train absolutely seamless.
Do you agree with that, Michael?
I would definitely agree with that. I mean, it's that central location, and you just don't have to worry about getting from the airport back into the center of the city as well, or crazy delays, and, you know, the next train may be in another hour rather than trying to figure out getting onto the next plane. The trains are just much easier.
And, Don, do you sign on that as well?
I totally agree. I love trains, especially in Europe. They're really comfortable. You get to meet people on a train in a way you can't on a plane. You strike up a conversation with the person across from you. Suddenly you're sharing sandwiches, and they're telling you their life story, and it's really, really just a wonderful way to get into the heart of a place on multiple levels. You see the scenery going by, you talk to the people, you have a meal in the dining car, you can sleep on a train. It's just really the way to go.
We have an email from Lynn saying, do you have a recommendation for a place to stop or stay overnight on a drive from Galway to Cork, Ireland? Can you take that, Alison? I don't mean to typecast you there, but you do work for BBC Travel.
It's true. I'm also Irish.
Okay.
And recently completed, I recently actually drove from Shannon across the southern coast to Dublin. So let's see, Galway to Cork. I would recommend, actually, there's a really lovely town called Kinsale on the southern coast of Ireland, and it's, you know, it's tiny. It's four or five different streets, but it's right on the coast. It's very picturesque in the sense that you've got the sailboats in the water. You've got, you know, two or three really great seafood restaurants right there on the shore. And actually, I found the artists there to be really fantastic, both from kind of a landscape painting perspective. They were really capturing exactly what I saw. There were also some really lovely jewelry makers that, you know, again, it offers a different insight into a destination. You can talk to them. You can find out what brought that craft to that region. Take a little something home.
That sounds like fun. And that is Alison Busaka. She is travel editor for bbctravel.com. Also with us, Michael Luongo. He's a New York-based travel writer. He's written a number of travel books, including Frommer's Buenos Aires and Gay Travels in the Muslim World. I do want to talk to you about that. And Don George, a veteran travel writer and editor, also editor-at-large for National Geographic Traveler, author of Lonely Planet's Guide to Travel Writing. And yes, we are talking about where to go in 2015. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Don, let me go back to you. And where are some places in the United States you think people should make sure that they, you know, that they visit, if I can put it this way, before they die? But a place that they should, you know, they should make sure that in their lifetime they're going to go there.
Right. I would say, well, the cities, really, New York, Washington, San Francisco, I think people should definitely visit those. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and this place is so wonderfully rich, and I discover something new here every week, just about. So it's a cultural melting pot and a fantastically innovative place. So I would recommend those iconic cities, first of all. And then I think the American Southwest is just so fantastic. I took my family there when my kids were really young, and it just broadened their sense of nature and the possibilities of the world hugely. And so I would say that, Yosemite, Yellowstone, the national parks. There's so much richness here. You really don't have to go around the world just to have a wonderful travel experience. And I keep reminding myself that it's right next door.
Indeed it is. And you can eat very well where you live there, Don George.
You can indeed.
I'm missing that. Michael, how about for you, suggestions in the United States?
Within the United States, again, also the big cities, New York. I mean, I live in New York, and billions of people wish that they were here. I find, actually, the backwater parts of the South can be very interesting as well. I remember, drives on some of the more remote roads and, between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. And these little places that you see in old movies, and they're exactly like that. And I think, going off the beaten path in some of the more rural areas can be very interesting as well. And, the big city, Chicago. The other thing I think also are to see some of the great public works from the 1930s. The Hoover Dam, for example, which so vastly changed the way the West, how we saw the West and how the West developed. But part of that would also be seeing how it impacted the natives and so going to reservations and understanding better Native American culture.
Well, and if I can add Philadelphia to that list, and I notice a number of travel groups have put Philadelphia above places like New York, Michael.
The New York Times.
The New York Times seems to really like Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, well, you've got a lot of, as I grew up in New Jersey, but part of the New York suburbs rather than the Philadelphia suburbs, if we divide it in half. And as a child, what I loved about Philadelphia was going to see the history that, in some ways it sort of was Disneyfied because they, the everything that was around Independence Hall, was sort of made into a park, so you don't really see it in a real setting. But just this idea that you can touch these buildings. Plus, because it was less expensive, you have very interesting restaurants and very interesting neighborhoods, funky places in Philadelphia that I think fewer people knew about because Philadelphia was overshadowed by both New York and Washington for so long.
Well, and I think those days are slowly disappearing. Let me get Bijou from Bucks County to join us. Bijou, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My wife and I spent our honeymoon in New Zealand, and we spent 3 weeks in a small camper.
Oh, wow.
And remember that experience very, very well, and just wanted to suggest to Allison a couple of things. One of the most interesting thing we did was a jet boat trip. It was called Shotover Jet Boat Trip, where you ride on these jet boats, and in the same area, you get to experience bungee jumping. And lastly, in the east coast of South Island, there is a glacier called Franz Joseph Glacier, and there you get a helicopter trip that takes you to the top of the glacier, live glacier, and the helicopter lands there, and you're allowed to come out and experience the moving glacier there, and that is quite an unforgettable experience.
Oh, Bijou, that sounds great. Allison, do I hear you writing things down?
I was, yes. So first of all, you're very adventurous. Thank you so much for those tips. And we were actually just this morning talking about the helicopter trip to Franz Josef. It's not often in your life that you say, honey, have we booked the helicopter yet? So we have that on our list. Thank you so very much.
That's great, Bijou. Don George, since you are going to Japan and it sounds like Asia or Southeast Asia, What advice do you have for people that just get so jet lagged, they feel like they're zombies for the first couple of days of their vacation?
What I always try to do, often unsuccessfully, is stay up, get on the local time. So I force myself to stay awake until 10 p.m. on the day that I arrive, and then try to adjust that way. I know some people who actually try to do that before they leave, day or two before they leave. I always find that weird, and I can't do that, but because I'm just too out of sync with the people around me. But I think that the quicker I can just get myself into the local time frame, the better. And that's what I try to do. And often that means just wandering aimlessly for some hours, trying to take in the impressions of what's around me, and then get exhausted and fall asleep. That's how I do it.
And to Michael, is there a must-take thing that you have that when you travel and you give advice to other travelers, like this is something you must take with you no matter where you go?
You know what I always bring with me is an immersion coil. It's a little thing you stick in water to heat water.
Oh.
And that way you can always have breakfast on your own time rather than a hotel's time. It's very easily portable. And I also like to make tea late at night when I'm writing, for example. So that's something I always bring with me, these old-fashioned immersion coils. And that's one of my top recommendations.
That's so interesting.
Save money and you can eat on your own time.
Allison, we're almost up on a break here. Is there a must-take thing that you have?
I bring a little bit of duct tape. Honestly, I'm a little old school in the fact that I feel like duct tape can absolutely fix anything. You know, the hem on your dress needs to be a little shorter. Go ahead, tape it up. You know, something broke in your, iPhone. Go ahead, tape it up. So it's
great.
Not attractive necessarily, but it works in a crunch.
Yeah, can you top that, Don George?
No, I can't. But what I always bring is a little flashlight. I find that a tiny pocket flashlight, a powerful pocket flashlight, can come in unexpectedly and wonderfully useful. So I always have that.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Don George, Michael Luongo, and Allison Busaca. And we are talking about where to go in 2015, interesting places around the world to visit, what to take with you, important things to take with you. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, and I see people are, radiotimes@whyy.org. And send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Any questions, comments, or suggestions? Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with Allison Busaca, travel editor for bbc.com/travel. That's the correct address, I should add. Michael Luongo, he's a New York-based travel writer. He's written a bunch of travel books, including Frommer's Buenos Aires and Gay Travels in the Muslim World. And Don George, veteran travel writer and editor, also the editor-at-large for National Geographic Traveler and the author of Lonely Planet's Guide to Travel Writing. Let me get Margaret from, looks like Lumberville, to join us in Radio Times. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello,
hi,
Marty. I'm a big fan. Thanks for a wonderful show.
Oh, you're welcome.
But we are hoping to travel to Costa Rica this summer. We have two tween girls, I guess, like around 10 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere I look in Costa Rica, it looks like it's stunningly beautiful and would be suitable. But I'm trying to find out, for an introduction to the country, what would be a good place to visit, that doesn't involve a lot of traveling through the country once you get there, and would offer, nice beaches and nature there.
Sure. Well, can I come with you, Margaret?
Sure.
Well, let me toss that first to you, Michael. Can you take that? I don't think we have Michael up. How about for you, Don George? Can you take that?
Yeah. I've never been to Costa Rica, so I can't speak from personal experience. I remember reading that Corcovado National Park is a really great place to go that families seem to enjoy tremendously. So that's one place I would think of. But I don't know, maybe Allison has been there.
Have you been there, Allison?
I haven't, but We did actually just, it's been on my mind because specifically we ran this piece on the Nicoya Peninsula, and it's kind of this surfed yoga haven. It looks like you just come out an incredibly more fit and happy person. So it sparked me as I'm not sure about its accessibility per se, but it looks worth the journey.
And Michael, do we still have you?
Yeah, it's Costa Rica's, again, I'm another person who hasn't yet been there. And it's a very, very popular destination and one of only two countries in Latin America I have not been to. So it's hard for me to give recommendations beyond what, you know, both Don and Allison have given. But there's the national park, I'm blanking on the name of it, that most people go to, and there are resorts near it. And the beaches are all very accessible. And then many people combine that with some time in San Jose in the capital.
Sounds like you almost can't go wrong, Margaret. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. We have a Facebook comment from John. He says, go to Portugal, exclamation point. It's wonderful. We visited last June. Excuse me. Absolutely loved it. The food, the people, the countryside full of vineyards and cork plantations. Allison, have you been to Portugal?
I have, actually. I was really lucky to spend a week in Lisbon. So I haven't quite gotten much outside of Lisbon, which I definitely want to do. The wine country, the coasts, it's all worth seeing. Lisbon, as just a fair warning, is a very steep city. It's the type of place when you look at a map and you think that you're there, you look up, and it's all the way up the mountain. So bring good walking shoes.
Sort of like San Francisco, right, Don George?
Exactly.
We have a tweet from Diane. What do they think of Airbnb accommodations? Don, do you have an opinion on that?
I do. I think that Airbnb can be a really excellent alternative. I think what you have to understand about Airbnb is that it's not a hotel. You don't just go online and reserve a room for a night. You're literally contacting people who may or may not get back to you. And so you have to factor that into your planning. If you want to use Airbnb, you should really contact multiple people and expect to wait a little while before you hear back from them and realize that you may wait a week and find out that, in fact, their room's not available. So you have to really plan further in advance using Airbnb, but it can be a great way to meet local people and to save money on accommodations, and I think it's a wonderful new alternative to traditional hotels.
Michael, let me ask you about your book, Gay Travels in the Muslim World. Is traveling in the Muslim world any different for gays and lesbians than it is other parts of the world?
Well, the Muslim world is a very broad part of the world. You know, everything from Morocco all the way on to Malaysia. So this broad swath of places. That book was not a guidebook, but a collection of essays, my own and some other men who had traveled or lived in the region. Some countries are much easier to travel in. Lebanon, in particular, is, in spite of the fact that technically it's illegal to be gay in Lebanon, it has this enormous gay infrastructure inside of Beirut. You have other places. We keep hearing about ISIS and all the terrible things that ISIS is. That's clearly an area you want to avoid. But then you have places like Jordan, which in Amman there are gay places that are sort of not exactly above the radar, not exactly under the radar. Egypt is one of those very problematic places for locals and to a degree for tourists. But every place is very different. But I would never tell someone to avoid going to a place because of their sexuality, but that they should understand how things are in a place. And as a tourist, you're generally in many ways above the law. So local laws don't necessarily impact you, but that also means to be very careful about the people with whom you're interacting because they remain behind. So take your cues from locals. With the internet, you know, with Facebook, with Twitter, and most of these places also have gay rights organizations where you can get some idea of the place. The other thing is there are sites for meeting people for a variety of reasons, such as Grindr, which is quite famous, but that can be just for meeting people to talk with them and finding out ahead of time what a place is like. So it's every place is very different, sometimes dangerous, sometimes far more welcoming than you'd expect. The other thing I also tell people is because
in most countries, because Muslim society divides by sex, by gender, sometimes things can appear gay but are not.
Huh.
But at the same time, things that are gay can be very visible but hidden at the same time, because men are always paired with men walking around.
Well, that's fascinating. Let me get to looks like Lena calling from the Art Museum area in Philadelphia. Lena, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So last May, I just graduated college, and my best friend and I, we decided to go backpacking in South Korea, Thailand, and Cambodia.
Wow.
And for me, I go to Korea almost every summer, and every time I go as a second-generation immigrant, it really helps me open my eyes towards my heritage a lot more. And Thailand and Cambodia was absolutely wonderful, and we spent in 2 weeks, I think, including our plane ticket, only $500, because we used apps like Hostel World that helped us get hostels and hotel-like places for like $16 a night, and
wow,
split with two friends. It was $8 a night for a really nice room. And I think going to a country like Cambodia really helped me appreciate the things and the luxuries that I've been given being born in the States, whereas I could see that the locals in Cambodia didn't have much of that. So it was eye-opening. I'm really grateful, and I really recommend traveling after college.
Well, I appreciate Lena, the call to Radio Times, and Don George, I'm assuming she's a caller after your own heart.
Yes, I love her already.
I can tell, yes.
I mean, I traveled immediately out of college. I spent a year in Europe and then 2 years in Japan, and it absolutely changed my life. And I think what she said is completely 1,000% correct, that it opens our eyes to how big the world is and how differently people live from us, and how similar underneath it all we all are with each other. And I actually was just in Cambodia, too, and I actually wrote about it for Allison as well as for National Geographic. And Cambodia is such an incredibly, profoundly moving place, and beautiful and tragic and such a rich mix of ancient, beautiful culture and difficult recent history, and incredibly optimistic, endearing, engaging, excited young people. And it recharges your batteries to go to a place like that and realize all over again how precious life is and how precious our planet is. So that was a wonderful call, and I agree wholeheartedly.
Lena, thanks for the call. Let's see what Kelsa from Royersford has to say. Kelsa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I have tickets to take my 4.5-year-old son to Romania for 2 months this spring.
Oh, wow.
And it's just going to be me and my son, and I'm looking for an apartment to actually experience living there, but I do have a little bit of fear, safety issues. Any recommendations for ensuring that, you know, we're as safe as possible on our travels from Milan, where we're flying into, to get to Constanta and back?
Let me see if Allison can help you, Kelsa. Any thoughts?
You know, it's tough kind of not knowing, you know, your specific route or your, you know, kind of what your situation is. Right. But there are a lot of things that you can obviously do kind of to make sure you've got insurance, right? Trip insurance, I think, is a little underrated. It's going to be that kind of safety net that, even if you don't use it, and hopefully you certainly don't have to, it's the type of thing that makes you feel a little bit better. You know, I can't speak enough for, depending on what area you want to be in, like, try and get in touch with some of the locals. You know, we live in this incredibly connected world where it shouldn't be too hard to get someone on the phone or on an email or even via tweet, you know, and say, hey, I noticed that you are really an expert in this area. I'd love to talk to you about the location of this apartment that I'm looking at. Is this smart? Is it not? You know, there's probably real estate sites that would be worth maybe just a check out, someone to give you a little bit of information. You know, the one thing I think that every journalist knows is everyone's always willing to kind of answer a few questions, and especially they're always willing to help. And people are fiercely proud of the places in which they live. So if you get a local on the line, they're going to be able to help you out in that regard.
Kelsa, good luck, and thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me see what Megan from Pipersville has to say. Megan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 4- and 6-year-old, and we're looking to take a family vacation this summer. We're thinking one of the national parks or maybe a lake in America, and I was wondering if anyone had any recommendations.
And Don George, you recommended a number of national parks, pretty well-known national parks. Anything you want to offer to Megan?
Where are you? You're on the East Coast, so I'm not sure how far afield you want to go. I really love Yosemite as a family destination. It's just so it has an infrastructure that's well suited for families, and yet you can get way out in the middle of nowhere and have incredible nature experiences. But I would say really any national park is a great way to go. I would just do some research online to make sure you're going to be able to find a place to stay there and just have a sense of what the most important activities are that you want to build into your trip.
And national parks often have things for kids to do to get them involved or engaged in what they're doing in a park as well. Megan, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We have a tweet from Jim, and this is to you, Allison. Everyone seems to be very interested in your trip to New Zealand, saying, how many bags will Allison take for 3 weeks in New Zealand? Always like good packing tips.
It is a great question. We are looking. I pretty much always try and travel in a carry-on, even
really?
For this trip. So the most I will do will be a carry-on and then an additional bag for kind of supplies, because obviously we need lanterns and things like that. But I just came back from a 2-week trip in 3 very, very different climates. And I managed to do that in a carry-on.
Wow.
You know, my strategy is I have a table that I put out. It's my packing table. I do it a few days, maybe a few weeks in advance, depending on the extremity of the trip. And I put everything out, and every day I take something away. And it really helps me whittle down exactly what I will need. It prevents me from overpacking. You can buy pretty much everything you need on the road. Just don't forget your passport. So if for some reason you do end up forgetting something, or you really find you rip a hole in your pants or something, you can buy another pair. So it's just for easeability, and that will be my goal. I'll let you know how it goes.
Everyone apparently is very interested in your trip with your boyfriend to New Zealand. Let me get Chris from Ballacoonwood to join us. And Chris, we're almost out of time, but go ahead. You're on the air.
Sure. I just wanted to say thank you. It's a great topic.
Thanks.
And I am a big fan of travel, and I wanted to just bring a semi-serious note to the conversation. I think Allison touched on it very quickly. And that's travel insurance. You know, when people go traveling, particularly abroad, their insurance will not work there. It's not a matter of sort of going to the hospital and having it taken care of. You're going to be expected to pay. So it really is very important to, especially if you're going abroad and especially if you're going to a place that may be wonderful culturally but may be wanting medically, to get yourself prepared just in case something happens. So I just wanted to add that.
I appreciate you doing that, Chris. Michael, you agree with what Chris suggested?
Yeah, I mean, you really want to find out about your insurance, because you find out that some things you thought would be covered are not covered, but then sometimes you have to pay for things ahead of time and you are reimbursed. So you do need to know the fine print. You need to know if you're buying insurance because you have some medical issue and I'll just buy insurance and it'll be covered. Most of the time it is not. And it may mean buying much more expensive specialized insurance rather than the regular standard thing that you find on a website.
Well, I wish we could go on, and clearly our listeners do as well, because a lot of people want to join our conversation, but we have to end the hour. Michael Luongo, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. He's a New York-based travel writer. Don George, thank you, as always, for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty. Always a pleasure.
For us as well. And he's the editor-at-large for National Geographic Traveler. And Allison Busaka, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Marty. It was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun for us as well. And have fun in New Zealand. She's the travel editor for bbc.com/travel. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and also how to find us on satellite radio. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.